Good morning. Is this on? Hello? Hello? It's not on, is it?
How dare it?
Oh, whoa. Okay. It's working. What a beautiful silence. This mystical way of life is really a very paradoxical way of life, because we have many things taking place at the same time. In one level, this is very structured. The spiritual principles that we study form a pattern, and we can see how that pattern unfolds. And there are different ways that you can put together these elements of spiritual principles that can maybe be beneficial in your understanding of how this dimension of life functions. But on the other hand, we're really without structure. We're without pattern. It is an extremely free way of life, and it's an extremely individual way of life. One of the things I think that over the years has happened in the study of this message is that students tend to look to Joel's experience and think, oh, we have to duplicate that, or we should live in the way that Joel lived, or have the same kind of experiences that Joel had. And Joel says very clearly in his message that this is my demonstration. This is my unfoldment that I'm sharing with you. But the expectation that our experience should be similar to Joel's experience can be a sidetrack, can lead to a dead end, because we're not going to experience what Joel has laid out for us as a spiritual way of life. He had a very unique experience, and we have to find, after we have learned the principles and have made these principles our own, then we have to find our own unique way of demonstrating them, of putting them into practice. The principles haven't changed. The principles of oneness, of nowness, of omnipresence, of love, of omnipotence, omniscience, all those principles are complete. They function anywhere in the universe, like the principles of mathematics or the principles of music. Joel uses that analogy in his book, that the principles of mathematics function not only every place on earth. It doesn't matter what your culture or what your language, 2 + 2 = 4. And that is a universal principle. That would be true, you know, in a galaxy far, far away. 2 + 2 would still be 4. Now, it might be represented in different forms, but the principle is the same. The principle of music, harmony, tonality, those are universal principles. The principles of color, the way color is refracted. When you see a rainbow, you're seeing all the colors that we can perceive through our physical senses. And those colors are the same. If you had a refraction of light, you know, 10,000 light years from Earth, it would still have the same spectrum from ultraviolet to infrared. That those are universal principles. When you understand the principle, the mystical principles, and the basic one is that I and the Father is one, that there is no separation, that there is no God and. If there is this oneness that we went through so thoroughly yesterday, when that is understood completely within the individual, then it is a great, it brings with it a great freedom, because you then are at the standpoint of expressing yourself in however that comes about for you. And our expression is always determined by where, by our interest. What do we really love? Where do we put our interest? Where, and examine yourself, where do you spend most of your time? On what do you spend most of your time? Is it with work? Is it with family? Is it communicating? Is it on the internet? Is it in entertainment? Where you find that you spend most of your time, that is where your treasure is. That is where you are functioning at in a degree of abandonment. Now, speaking for myself, it's in creative pursuits. When I'm painting or when I'm writing, time disappears because I really step out of time and space into a dimension where there is just the now, and in that now there is a flow of creativity. Whatever sense I have of the whatever project I'm working on, when I can get into that consciousness, I find that things flow without effort. Things just unfold. If you're in the business world, I know that I've seen in business dealings where things just unfold. There is a preparation. And what is the preparation that we have before going into our daily life? That preparation is establishing our oneness with God. When we have established that sense of oneness, then when we go into the world, we are seeing the world not from an adversarial point of view, but we're seeing the world in an exclusive way. An inclusive way, where everybody that is coming into the scope of our consciousness is going to come into an atmosphere of spiritual recognition. When that happens, there's only one activity, and that's harmonious. There can't be inharmony, disease, conflict within the individual that's established this oneness with God, because it doesn't exist. It only exists in this realm of ego, of personal sense. We ask ourselves, who am I? Sometimes that seems like such a Stephen Hawking's, and everybody says, oh, this is the great question of life. Who am I? How did I get here? What is my purpose in life? And in a way, it is a big question. But when you've had an experience of oneness, the who am I becomes a reminder of our true nature. Comes a reminder that when this recognition of spirit has taken place, that there is another activity that functions in me and through me. And this activity that functions is spirit, is truth. It's the Christ. Now, in Scripture, there's kind of two paths that we have. There's two stages of consciousness, and this is after the there has been the spiritual recognition. Yesterday, I went through Jesus' ordination and where he could then go out and teach. And what he taught was that there is this greater life, universal, infinite life within you. That I that is within you is greater than is anything in this world. So that was shifting the authority, shifting the balance, taking the balance away from human or the advantage away from human perception and human ego and human power, and diminishing that so that this one power, one life, one presence is dominant. And when that oneness, you're functioning out of that, that requires an attitude on the individual of humility. You can't have an egocentric attitude and allow oneness to be functioning. They're incompatible. So to let this one function, that sense, that personal sense of self, the sensory sense of self, diminishes. And this is in a way a one of these paradoxes, because so many people are struggling with self-worth because they think, oh, I'm not good enough for what I'm doing. And it's across the board. It's not to any one gender. So many people think, oh, I can't try that because I don't have the skill. I can't go there because I'm not good enough. I don't have the education. I don't have the experience. Whatever the excuses are, we tend to denigrate our abilities humanly. And then if we really push, we're trying to build up this human sense of self and project that so that we can be successful. But in projecting that human sense of self, we're building up an ego that really is very, very fragile. It does, and that ego doesn't really exist. It only exists to the mental effort that's put into that ego. And a great example of that are people who are never wrong, who are always so positive. Sandra and I have had business dealings in the movie industry with people who everything they do is the best, the most successful, the most wonderful. And we were with somebody who had a movie that flopped, and he said, this was the greatest success I've ever had. And you read the paper and you see that, oh, didn't do any business, the critics panned it, but you know, and there's never an awareness of a negativity. And that is the height of personal ego. And if that is strong enough, with enough belief behind it, there is enough personal power behind it, it can fool many, many people. This particular producer was always getting money to make new movies, you know, even if he didn't have a very good track record. But he never made a mistake, and it was always this, he had this wonderful image, and he could talk. He could talk your ear off. He could sweet talk you. He would bring everybody in, and in a way, it's a form of hypnotism. And what is this hypnotism? This is the height of personal ego. And that personal ego, if there is, you know, if there's any spiritual nature that has been awakened in an individual like that, they usually have a huge fall, because that personal ego cannot sustain itself. There really is no power there. And eventually, there is a fall. And this individual, unfortunately, came under very hard times. The projection that just around the corner is the next deal. I'm waiting for that one phone call. I've got all this money lined up, and I've got a deal for 30 pictures, but I'm waiting for that phone call. And, oh, the phone call is coming. I know the money's coming next week. Next week we're going to be in heaven. And, you know, I'm using this example, but this is basically across the board. In any field, there is this extreme example of personal ego pushing and pushing. And where do they live? They live in the past and the future. They don't live in the now. They are constantly ignorant of how they sound when they are promoting themselves, unless you are wanting something from them or thinking they can give you something, then you can fall under this spell fairly easily and go along with this kind of attitude for a while. But when there is a spiritual awareness there, that kind of ego doesn't have its power. It loses its power. It loses its influence. And the truth is revealed. When there is a spiritual realization that takes place, the truth is revealed. It is never hidden. When you start your day with when you come into an experience of oneness and you begin your day that way, it takes that ego nature that is necessary for certain dealings in this world, but it moves it to the second place, and it has the one eye that has that spiritual sense, that universal sense of self as the active ingredient. And that universal sense of self is always meeting and communicating and communing with itself in others. And in that way of doing business, you have harmony and you have an unfoldment where agreements are made, where whatever kind of business is being discussed, it moves forward on a level of integrity where there is benefit for everybody involved, and it is a harmonious. It has a harmonious result. I know that this story is in my book, but I'll tell it here because it's kind of relevant about this ego. We have a commercial building, and Sondra, our office was in this suite of offices in this building, and we had a tenant, we had vacancies, and we had someone come in and wanted to rent the whole suite of offices, the whole second floor of the building. And we made a deal, and they were very egotistical, but it was, you know, the bells didn't go off in our mind, the intuition saying this might not work out, because they were have this positive attitude. They were going to make lots of money. They were going to be so successful, you know, and it was a successful tenant for us. So we had rented to them. They moved in a dozen people, but our office where we published the recordings was a small office in the same floor. And after about a year, the owner of the business came to me and wanted to buy the building. And I told him it wasn't for sale. We liked having the property, and we were going to keep it. And that individual started becoming a little belligerent. He said, "Well, you know, I have a lot of power in this town." And I thought, well, what does that have to do with me selling you my building? You know, fine, you have power in this town. But still, the building's not for sale. Well, within a month, we had every city inspector coming down on us. We had the fire department, the health department, the zoning department. We had the safety department. And lo and behold, we found that we had all these complaints against us that our building was unsafe, that our building was non-conforming, that we had other tenants in the building that were making people ill. And then this person came to me and said, "I'd like to buy your building." And I said, "No, it's still not for sale." And he said, "Well, you know, I have a lot of power. You know, I haven't even shown you the power I have in this town." I said, "Well, I'm sorry, but the building isn't for sale." So the major tenant upstairs said, "Well, you know, half my staff is getting sick because of another tenant in your building, so I'm not going to pay you any rent until you kick the other tenants out of your building so that we are not getting sick." I said, "Well, you know, I don't see that as any kind of a solution." But the other tenants that did leave, and they were a major tenant, a warehouse, just because of all of these inspections. So the temptation was, okay, we've lost a major tenant. we have the other major tenant not paying rent but still using the offices. What do we do? What is our approach? How do we deal with this? And, you know, the reaction is that this is completely unfair. This is unjust. And we all have our Achilles heels. One of mine is injustice. When I see injustice, it just makes me furious. And sometimes I lose that sense of spiritual detachment that's necessary to, you know, to maintain that peace. And I must say that it was very hard to walk through this office and see these people that were just with a big smile on their face trying to screw you. It just to maintain your calm in that atmosphere. But Sandra and I, we practiced. We would go into our studio and we figured we can't send out recordings to people from an attitude or an atmosphere of anger, of conflict, of feeling that, you know, we're being used. So we would sit there sometimes for half an hour, 40 minutes, until we had really come to a release. We were in our own environment, we were in our own space, and we were at peace, and we would do our work, and then we left. During this time, we made a pact. We said, whenever we see these people, no matter how, you know, it stirs up that anger within, let's reverse that. Let's realize that that is the Christ. These people, however they're acting out of this human ego, this human sense of power, that is not power. The only power there is, the omnipotence, is in this peace. If we fight, it's just going to be a battle. And who's going to win? The only people that will win will be the attorneys, because they'll make all the money. But everybody else will end up having to, you know, to take whatever losses they take. So we consciously went and practiced this: judge not after appearances, love your enemies, do good to those who persecute you. We were polite, we were not nasty. And after about a month, one of the people in the office that had, it was their actually their in-house attorney, and he was the one that had claimed that the tenants were getting ill from something that another tenant was doing. And Sandra, we have a health food store, it's the other tenant in the building, so all these people are getting sick, and yet nobody in the health food store complained at all. There was no problem with, and they are people who are, you know, the slightest, that they won't even let me fumigate around the building because, you know, it's going to affect the atmosphere of their health food store. So Sandra is in line with this attorney that's there. And we had known him, you know, before this incident, we had a very lovely relationship. But then when it's how the ego sucks people into this camp of, okay, we're now a little group and we're going to fight for our what we believe is right, and that somehow they convince themselves that they have a right to kick other people out and take over a building, which I couldn't quite put my head around that. So anyway, in the health food store, Sandra was in line, and suddenly she had this kind of sense of spiritual power just coming through her, and it was like a release. And the person in front of her, this attorney, what did he do? He just jumped. He just was so startled. It was like Sandra went to touch him and it was like, you know, a lightning bolt hit him. And he ran out of the store. And Sandra kind of was like, oh, well, this is the nature of this spiritual integrity. You know, it's inviolate. It cannot be touched. And so we thought, okay, well, you know, we both thought, well, you know, this is being resolved. There is something that's taking place here spiritually. So the next morning we go in to go to work, and we go into the upstairs offices, and they have completely moved out. All the desks, everything. In the middle of the night, everybody is gone. And the building is totally back under our auspices, and we just we rejoiced and we kind of laughed. It was like, well, now that is a demonstration that without taking action, that this holding into this consciousness, into this realization, dissolves that personal sense of ego until it no longer, it cannot function or exist in your experience. And then from there, we had to reconfigure our building. We had to meet building codes. I mean, it was not like in a sense, it caused a lot of problems. But what those problems brought about was a reconforming of our building to where it has been certified, and you know, it can never be touched again for as long as that building stands, as far as from the city or the county, because it was an old building, and you know, there was the idea, oh well, this building, they'll make you tear it down and build a new one, which would, you know, not be feasible. But the point is that the I that you are is spiritual. It is not built on a human sense of power. It is not built through what you know. It's not built upon your political connections or your power of the pocketbook, the power of money. Money is always used as a power. If you feel that you are owed and the person is withholding, then they seem to have the power, and you know, you have to do something to counteract that power to be compensated. Spiritually, when you withdraw that power, that kind of deception cannot last, and it is always revealed. The truth is revealed. One other quick story. We had someone that stayed in our house when we were doing a lot more traveling than we do now, and there were certain rules that we had where there were no parties. The person staying there was just basically house sitting. When we came back from a trip one year, and things just seemed not right in the house, and we thought, gee, there's something has been going on, but we didn't know what. We'd been gone, and the person said, no, everything has been fine, it's been harmonious, there's no problem. And this was when there were canisters of film, and I'd taken all of the photos from our trip to the drugstore to get them developed, and Sandra said, you forgot, here's another roll of film. I said, oh, I didn't, I thought I took them all, so I took that roll of film. We're going through all of our pictures, and when we go through, all of a sudden there's all these pictures of our house with this huge party going on, all these people that we didn't know on our lawn, and then pictures of our house sitter with all these strangers and partying. And we said, you know, we said we didn't want to have any parties and all these people here. And she said, I never gave a party. And we pulled out these pictures. And he said, well, isn't this you in a party? And she looked at the picture of herself. No, that's not me. The ego just cannot stand to be criticized, because the ego, that human ego, has no substance. There's nothing there. So, and if you do not engage in that ego battle, and you do not engage in fighting or resisting or trying to correct someone's personal perceptions of life, and let the spiritual nature do the work, that he that is within me, who is greater than he that is in the world, let that activity function, you find that all these kind of problems are resolved. And the only way that they become issues is when your ego gets in there and tries to change somebody, tries to correct something. In the Bible, there's two aspects of this Christ. One is the I am, and the other is the I have. Now, in a way, we have a model with the activities of Jesus and the activities of Paul. Now, Jesus begins in his teaching, establishing his spiritual credibility, for lack of a better word. And that is, he uses the word have. I have meat that ye know not of. I have a greater witness. Thou art with me, and all that I have is thine, speaking as the Christ. This is this possession that we possess, the spiritual activity. It's part of our being. But this possession of this spiritual activity is the functioning in this world. When Jesus says, I have meat ye know not of, he's meaning I have this inner resource that will supply me with all that's necessary. When he says, I of my own self can do nothing, as I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just because I seek not my own will, I have a greater witness. It is bringing this activity of truth into the resolution of problems. Righteous judgment is letting that spiritual discernment come within you, within the individual, and revealing the steps necessary to take to solve a problem. Paul, his position was to have that mind that was in Christ Jesus. That if we develop that mind that was in Christ Jesus, we develop the tools and the ability to function as this Christ activity. But this is from the position that we are still in this world, and that there is an activity within us that we let come forth. Now, the basis of this, the essence, the truth of this, what is behind this, is I am. But now you can't say, I am the bread of life. You can't say, I am God. I am that I am, unless you are in that consciousness of peace. Unless you are in that consciousness of oneness. That's true in the consciousness of oneness. But when you're dealing with the world, you have to basically let go of any kind of personal projection, even if it's the, well, I have this power, I have this resource, I have this awareness. No, you know that you have it, and you know that this activity is going to flow through you. But the basis of that activity is I am. The basis of that activity is that I am the meat, the bread, the water. It's not that I have it. I am it. When you move into the I am, you're moving into the demonstration of spirit here and now. It's no longer there's no longer any separation. There's no longer any division mentally. There is only the oneness. to move into that experience of I am really requires our abandonment of any concept. All belief, we go into this silence and we go into this peace completely devoid of want, of need. It really is our renewal. We let go of everything. Whatever demands are made on us, we let those go. We step out of this sense of time into the now. Fear leaves us in this consciousness because fear is attached to this ego. It's afraid to make a mistake. It's afraid to be wrong. It's afraid to disappoint. None of that is part of your true identity. That's all a projection outside of yourself. It's all a concept of self. So you can take risks when you begin to live out from this soul center. You're not afraid of mistakes. You take the time to practice this presence because it is the practice of being in this now moment, having an awareness of this harmony that exists, this universal harmony, stillness. That grows within you with this practice. If you meditate and are not having a sense of this harmony or peace, try again. In other words, A meditation is a spontaneous activity, really. It's a discipline that you can do on a regular basis, but it is also spontaneous. And if you have your meditation time set and you close your eyes and you watch your thoughts and you get to that place where your thoughts slow down and you can find peace, but you don't feel anything more than an emptiness, then recognize that you are one no matter what you are experiencing. There's nothing that can separate you from the activity of God. You have made your, you have given the effort, you have put your sense into, you have shifted your perception in, within to the Spirit, and realize that that act of love, that act of acknowledgement of the truth, is sufficient. And then as you're going about your day, if you have more time, you take a moment or two, 10 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute, just to turn your attention within. Just to let the thoughts, to let that busy mind quiet until there is that openness, that receptivity, that silence. And again, you recognize the silence. You acknowledge it. This is loving God with all your heart and mind and soul. Because you're putting your attention within, toward the source, toward the essence, toward the substance of all life, essence of your being, the I that you are. And then you move on with your day. And if things aren't working out in the day and things are not going the way you had hoped they would go in the day, or there's problems arising in the day, detach yourself from involvement in that. Do the work necessary, but let the judgment stay out. Problems are solved so much quicker without judgment, without blame. It's nobody's fault. Because if you're going to accuse someone of being at fault, then you are not loving your neighbor as yourself. You're treating them as someone that is separate and apart and doing something erroneous, doing something destructive. Withdraw that judgment. In your own mind, correct that in your own thought, because you have dominion over these feelings, these emotions that come into your experience. They're universal. And you might not be able to do it right away. So don't beat yourself up over it. If you get angry, okay, you've gotten angry. But when the anger subsides, be quick to forgive. Because that will take away that any lingering sense of discord. It will free you from the bondage of being attached through any human emotion. And when you have that sense of forgiveness, then you also go into the silence again. It clears the palate, so to speak. You've taken all of the old paint off your palate. And when you go into meditation, you're going with a sense of purity. And see if that experience doesn't come. And if it's just stillness without a sense of spiritual realization, acknowledge that you are giving your first fruits to God. You're giving your attention. You're giving yourself. To this one. And in that, you experience the oneness. You experience that deep peace. You experience the freedom. This whole way of life is about freedom. It is a freedom to express yourself in love, to give to all those around you this recognition of their true identity. Loving your neighbor as yourself doesn't mean, on one level you're friendly and you help your neighbor out, but ultimately it really means recognizing that Christ, that spiritual nature, that oneness in your neighbor. And as you do to another, you realize, oh, I'm doing that to myself. If I'm angry and want to get even with somebody, what are you doing? You're harming your own self, because there is only one self. This is the seed of all creativity. This is the seed of all knowledge. The stillness. Let's take a break, and we'll finish up in a few minutes. Thank you.